I told her. She shook her head. It was more than that. They found me and my brother, and my brother started swirling the air into a tornado, trying to protect us. They stabbed him to death. I took her other hand, desperate to comfort her, desperate to forget what it felt like to watch my brother burn. She drew in a short, unsteady breath. And they spent hours hurting me, trying to make my gifts appear. But they never came. So they bound up anyone who didn't have powers, with Rian tied right beside me. And they said we would watch the unclean people be sacrificed to the god. As if they weren't planning on murdering us, too. As if there was any way they would have purposely left anyone alive to remember. She was quiet for many long moments. They were so fast. They built the structure in a day, and it took another day to fill it, she told me. It didn't look like a man, not at first. It just looked like a cage of sapling and wood. And then they filled it, tying my people inside the structure. He made sure I could see my parents. And they stuffed the empty places with grasses and hay. When night came, they lit it on fire. The people, my family, struggled so much, so hard, that the structure moved, filled with hundreds of screams. And then it fell like a man to his knees. And so they called it the night the three-faced god walked. She pushed a tear off her face. When it fell, it shook the ground and something within me broke. And water came in, so much water that the island flooded and pulled Rian and me away with it. And we survived because the water was part of me. The water was me. She sniffed. My gift. It comes from anger and hate. But yours doesn't, she said, and she looked around us. Circling our feet, sand was building in small mounds like an infinitesimally small desert. I did that? I asked. She nodded, wiping another tear. You're incredibly powerful, Shalia. Your power begins with your love for people, she said. That's where your greatest strength lies. I frowned. But I didn't. Before I could feel threads, like it was a fabric I had to tug on to get it to obey me. She nodded. That's common. It helps you focus. As you grow stronger, you may still have a sense of the threads existing. They're the energy of the natural world. But you may not have to manipulate them to use your power. But how do I grow stronger? I have to love people more? She shook her head. No. You have to hold on to it, she said, her voice rough. She leaned her head on mine, and I wished I could take away the things she had suffered. Soon it will be easier. But when it's difficult to control, you have to hold that emotion within you. Remember it and treasure it, and it will open your power. But what can my power even do? I asked her. I don't really understand. Anything that is of the earth will do your bidding. In my experience, I can't make water manifest where there is no water, like in the desert. But usually there's water somewhere. And Earth's presence is endless. Her shoulders lifted. We're in a palace of rock. There couldn't be a better place to try something. Can I grow things? I asked, suddenly wanting to see Ilai blooms in this foreign land. She tilted her head. In a way, if the seed is there, you can give it soil and the right conditions to grow. But you can't grow something out of nothing. And it would be better if you had a fire element to give it heat and a water element to nourish the soil. The elements are at their most powerful when they work together. Disappointment filled my chest. But remember, she said, Many things come from the earth. Metals, minerals, crystals, to name a few. I thought of the gold that Rian had stolen, killing 10 men to do it. When did 10, or even 1, become the number of lives my brother felt comfortable taking? I wished for the precious metal, curling my hand into a tight fist, willing it to be full of the gold he needed. With a sigh, I let go, opening my hand. "Nothing happened," I told her, showing her my empty palm. She just looked at me, patient.
"Don't focus on the earth. Focus first on yourself, on that emotion."
"On love," I repeated, the words rough. She nodded. I thought of Rian on my wedding day, my fear and confusion and joy as I saw him in front of me. The first of my family to give me a gift, to give me his hopes for my future. Even when it was a future he wouldn't choose for me. He was the first to put a thread around my neck, and the gold in the foreign coins had a soft shine before the full sun rose. I felt invisible threads now at my fingertips, just like the ones my family had given me. These connected me to something greater. I felt it as little pieces of things, flecks really, pulled up from the soil in the cliffs below, the other rocks, from all around me, rolling and jumping into my hand. When I opened my eyes, I held a tiny chunk of gold. My heart pounded as I showed it to Kata. And she nodded, smiling at me.
"You see?" she said.
"Show me more," I asked. Kata guided my practice for a while longer, including bending a silver hair comb, but we soon heard the noise behind us. Without a word, Kata kissed my cheek and walked back into the fog. In seconds, I couldn't see her.
"Shalia?"
Kairos called. I came toward him until I could see him in the fog, still heavy but clearing. He squinted, looking through the fog with a wry smile.
"So many curious secrets, sister," he said.
I opened my mouth, but he shook his head.
"I don't need to know."
He offered me his arm, and I took it. "Where are we going?"
"To meet your new guard," he said, glancing around. "If you can see them."
He ushered me out of the chamber and up a staircase. In a sort of courtyard around a central tower, more than 20 men were lined up in the hazy glow of the fog.
"These men have all volunteered to create the Sapia, the Queen's Guard,"
I heard Galen say, and I turned to see him walking toward me, his hands behind his back, making his shoulders seem broader still. Shoulders that had sheltered me not even an hour ago. Saved me. The thought made me mute as he came closer and stopped several feet away. He looked me over for a stark moment.
"You're not injured?"
I nodded, my mouth dry. "Just shaken," I managed to say.
"Which brings us to your new guard,"
Kairos said.
"Yes,"
Galen said, clearing his throat.
"As I said, these men have volunteered. They are some of my best soldiers."
His eyes, lush and vibrant green, met mine. I hadn't realized his eyes were just as green as Calyx's, maybe more so. They were brighter somehow. Such a strange contrast to his carved rock face. Galen didn't seem to register my curiosity. He turned away from me and gestured 2 men forward. They didn't look like the rest. One was thinner, smaller, with a shifty look to him that reminded me of the way that Kairos slid around things. And the other was utterly massive. They wore the same black uniform, but theirs were looser, less fitted. The taller one came to meet me first. His hair was blonde and longer than the rest of his fellows, tied back by a leather string. 2 swords hung on his hips, and he had a long, broad weapon strapped to his back that looked as deadly as it did heavy, with a wicked, notched curve like a scimitar, but different.
He knelt to me.
My queen.
This is Zeph,
Galen said, gesturing to the large man. He stayed kneeling, and the second came forward. He was shorter, and he wore a leather breastplate over his uniform that was lined with small knives, and a sword on his back like Zeph.
This is Theron. These two will be your personal guards. These are men I have trained myself, and I would trust them with my life.
Galen said.
Which is the only way I will trust them with yours.
I glanced at Galen at such words, but he didn't look at me.
Please don't kneel to me, I told them. I don't like it.
They shared a glance, but stood.
We'll be with you night and day, my queen.
Zeph promised me.
We do not take today's insult to your person lightly.
I nodded to him. Thank you.
They will lead the others,
Galen explained to me.
They will be in shifts around you as needed. Some will guard your rooms, whether you're there or not. Others will support Zeph and Theron as needed on the move. Let me introduce you.
He introduced each man in turn, and I did my best to remember their names. They didn't know me, but they all had come, ready to defend me. It was reminiscent of my brothers back home, and I found comfort in the thought. I felt my power, as if suddenly my heart stretched all the way to my fingertips, and farther still, as if there were a million fine threads that my fingers were stroking against. And in that moment, I was totally aware of the stone beneath our feet, of the grains of fine sand moving over them, of the steel and silver in the armor and weapons of the men before me. Breathing to control my power, I looked for my brother. Kairos watched it all in silent consideration. He was changing, my funny brother, and I wasn't sure I liked it. Certainly not if the change was because of me. The men were dismissed, and I felt the gears shifting into place as Zeph and Theron gave orders, sliding 20 feet apart with me in the middle. Just like that, I felt a protective barrier between me and the world, and I could breathe easier.
Dinner's soon,
Galen said, coming to me again.
Even after today's events? I asked.
The court loves nothing more than to gather and spread gossip,
he said.
I'm sure it will be a great comfort after such a day. Shy?
Kairos called. His sly gaze moved between Galen and me, and I felt heat in my face, like his eyes saw something that wasn't there. I hurried over to him, and Kairos followed me back to my chambers without comment, Zeph and Theron a few steps behind him. When I went into my bedroom, Kairos stood at the door watching me thoughtfully.
Are you all right, Shai?
He asked softly. I squeezed his hand. Yes, thank you, Kai. He kissed my cheek. He left with a sigh on his lips, and Zeph stood at the door, while Theron gestured down the hallway.
We'll be right outside your door, my queen.
Thank you, I told them. That is power. When the sky grew dark, Zeph knocked at the door.
The Ishru would like to attend to you, my queen,
he said. They can come in, I told him, and thank you for asking. Zeph's mouth twitched as he opened the door.
You shouldn't get in the habit of thanking your servants,
he said. I smiled.
You shouldn't get in the habit of correcting your queen.
He chuckled as he allowed the women in, and they quickly set about attending to me, changing my clothes and brushing my hair to prepare me for dinner. When I was ready to leave, Zeph led me through the halls of the Tri-Castles. The second floor was a huge room with white stone and tall windows. Glittering red fabric draped down the walls to pool on the floor. There were 10 steps that led to a higher level against the back wall of the room, with space enough for a single table with 4 seats all along the back edge, so that those seated would look out over the place. In the center of the lower part of the room, there was a large pit of fire with an iron shelf around it. Several pots were on the shelf, ostensibly being kept warm for the meal. Something struck the stone with a resounding crack, and then the noise came again. I jumped.
"The Queen!"
shouted the voice. And I looked up to the raised level to see the small man in the long black coat striking a staff on the stone. The rest of the people in the room, a host of nobility in a riot of bright colors and exposed skin, turned and looked at where I stood in the doorway. There was a moment when I didn't move, didn't breathe, staring back at them all in panic. But then a young man in front bowed to me, and they all followed suit. I took a breath and stepped forward, skirting around the fire to walk up the staircase. I didn't like having my back to the people, and at the top I turned, just as the small man struck the ground again.
"The king,"
he bellowed. Calyx strode through the room as the people bowed, his flinty green eyes on me alone. He mounted the stairs, his back ramrod straight, stopping two steps down. He caught my hand, his fingers sliding up my palm to thread through my fingers. Flipping my hand over, he pressed his lips against my pulse, and I wondered if he could feel it pounding back against his mouth. "Where have you been all day?" I asked softly. He met my gaze, but didn't answer. He climbed the remaining stairs, but kept my hand captive, drawing me around the table. Pulling back the chair, he led me into it by my hand. I sat, and he took the chair beside me. "Calyx?" I asked. He didn't look at me. The man struck the floor once, and everyone slowly took their seats. Dene and Galen appeared together, and the man struck the floor again to announce them. They climbed the stairs without hesitation, and Galen helped Dene into her chair beside me before going to sit beyond Calyx. I touched her hand. "Are you all right?" I asked. "I didn't see you this afternoon." She glanced at me and away, like the flicker of fire. "Fine. I should be asking you." My shoulders lifted. "Between your two brothers, I was well looked after." "Where were you?" "Hidden. We all have our roles in the service of the three-faced god." She sighed, moving her eyes carefully toward Calyx. "And I've been searching the city since." "For those people?" I asked. "The resistance," she said. And now her careful eyes were watching me. "Your brother's cause." "You cannot believe my brother would be involved in something that would put me at risk," I said. Despite speaking to Kata, I still couldn't believe it. "No," she said. "But they are growing stronger, and both my brothers must take action to quell such an insurgence." "And I support them," I said, raising my chin. I would never stand against Rian, but I didn't like thinking of him stirring up violence against innocent people, even if he believed it was for a greater good. Then again, I didn't want to have to make my loyalties clear to either my brother or my husband. Her eyes met mine. "Good. I'm sorry I wasn't standing with you today. You must have been frightened." I nodded. "But I am safe." Dene nodded. The lids of the pots were all lifted, and an army of servants climbed the stairs to our table, offering the food to us. I couldn't recognize a single thing. It didn't look like meat or vegetables at all. There were liquids and things floating in the liquid, and it smelled foreign and strange. Calyx pointed, and servants placed dishes in front of me. The smell hit me and turned my stomach. "What is this?" I asked Dene in a whisper. "Fish," she said, using a spoon to lift a chunk of something white. My stomach clenched. She gave me a small smile and passed the bread in my direction.
Tearing some of it off, I gave her a grateful nod. My guards followed us back to our rooms, staying outside my door as we entered. Calix drew a breath and let it out slowly, his hands on his hips. I turned to him, wondering if I was meant to touch him as he so often touched me, if that would break the icy silence he'd given me all through dinner. Before I decided, I said, "You never told me where you've been today." Too clearly, I remembered the feeling of reaching for his hand and never getting it. He put his hands on my shoulders, but instead of pulling me closer, he pushed me aside.
"Busy," he said. "I don't know if you noticed, but we came under attack today."
His rejection burned through me. "Of course I noticed," I said. "I could have died." His face turned to mine, angry and stormy.
"That's what I thought too, Shalia, that everything we were fighting for could have been undone in a moment. But I saw him. I'm sure of it."
"Saw who?" I asked. But I knew already.
"Rian,"
he snarled.
"The brother who I assumed would never act out against his sweet little sister. So it remains that either he is disloyal and a sorry excuse for a man, or you knew exactly what he planned. You agreed to risk yourself, to tear my kingdom down."
My dread was overtaken by anger. "You think I knew?" I demanded. "I have never been more frightened in my life, and when I tried to reach for you, to get to you, you did nothing. You were so concerned with your hate that you could not spare a thought for me. And it was your brother, not you, who defended me."
"He's my commander. That's his thrice-damned job," he shouted at me.
"And you are my husband," I returned, my voice quiet but clear. "I was scared, and I wanted you."
"Not your brother,"
he growled, moving closer to me.
"What do you know of his rebellion, Shalia? What haven't you told me?"
"Nothing," I insisted, backing away from him.
"You're lying,"
he said, his face twisting. "I know only that it was part of the reason you married me," I said, stopping and raising my chin, drawing a breath and meeting his eyes. "Nothing else." He stopped advancing, his eyes narrowed and focused on me, calculating, assessing.
"I have a spy in his camp, you know. I know Rian's not the leader. Tasso says the leader's true identity is a closely guarded secret. You know who it is, don't you?"
he asked. "A spy?" I made a note of the name, though I wasn't sure if I could give such information to Rian. But if Calix had a spy in Rian's camp, he needed to know, didn't he? Calix's voice had lost the fury of a moment before, but I was still trembling, and I shook my head. "No, I don't. And you know I don't, or you never would have married me," I insisted. I crossed my arms. "I don't know how you can even ask me this, Calix." He turned, waving one arm as he shook his head.
"You do not understand what they did today. What this sorcery, what people seeing this sorcery represents."
"You told me of this prophecy, but I don't understand why you are blind to everything but hate when you are confronted with them. You have spent so much time caring for your people and solving their problems, but you forget it all when you encounter these powers."
"You're the one who is blind,"
he roared, and I stepped back from him. He lunged forward, shaking his fist at me.
"This sorcery will play tricks on your mind, wife. It seeks to destroy, to overpower. It wants my throne and my life, and it will do whatever it can to steal them from me."
He was wild, but for the first time, I felt like he was showing me the cause of his hate. "Calix," I said gently, "I don't understand."
He drew in a breath, turning abruptly away from me and walking to the balcony doors. He stopped with his fingers on the handle.
"It's all a trick,"
he said, his voice rough.
"First the Trivetis who gave me that prophecy, then her."
Slowly I came toward him. I put my hand on his shoulder, but he moved away. "Who, Calyx?" He turned to me, seizing my arms and pushing me until the back of my knees hit our bed. "Calyx?" I questioned. His touch was hard on my skin, and he shook me. "Calyx, stop," I pleaded.
"Are you deceiving me?"
he growled.
"I loved her, and she tricked me. She wanted my throne. She deceived me. Are you deceiving me?"
he demanded. I couldn't help the fear trembling through me. "I'm not deceiving you," I told him. I leaned forward carefully, and he brought his arms around me, lifting me up and kissing my lips. A lie sealed with a kiss to stop a conversation that it seemed neither of us wanted to have. That morning I woke early, close in my husband's arms. He was still asleep and I wanted to get up. Perhaps I could walk someplace after being trapped so long in a castle and in the carriage before that. But I didn't want to upset him after whatever precarious peace we had achieved last night. He had mentioned so many things. The prophecy, a spy in Rian's camp, a Trivetis, this girl who once had so much sway over his heart. It must have been the girl he told me he loved who had died. But did she have powers? Could he have ever loved an Elementa girl and act the way he did toward their kind? My kind. "I'm not deceiving you," I told him. Now the lie rang like a bell inside my mind, the sound bouncing back and forth, unending. Growing impatient, I nudged my husband's foot. He drew a deep breath and rolled over, and I elbowed his back.
"Wife?" he groaned, shifting.
I sighed like I was still asleep.
"Ugh. Good morning," he grunted.
I yawned and sat up, drawing the nightclothes around my shoulders. "Good morning," he looked out the window.
"It's early."
"I couldn't sleep much, thinking of yesterday," I told him. "You never told me what he will do in the wake of the attack." He stretched.
"My army was hunting them through the night, but I don't know if they'll find anything. These sorcerers, this resistance, hide in plain sight, among neighbors and friends who cover for them, if they know at all."
"And what of this elixir that you're searching for? Have your men found it in the desert?" An edge of suspicion came to his eyes.
"Not yet. They're trying to recreate it in the south,"
he said.
"But so far they have had little success."
"So what can we do to comfort the people?" I asked him. "There was so much fear in the courtyard yesterday."
"Fear,"
he mused.
"Yes, people should be afraid, shouldn't they?"
He sat up.
"Perhaps that's the key to this whole thing. If we make people afraid of their neighbors, if we teach them how insidious and deceitful these people are, they will cease harboring them."
"Calyx," I said, shaking my head. "I meant that there is already enough fear. Surely it's not a good idea to encourage more."
"Fear is healthy,"
he said with a dismissive wave.
"No, this is an excellent idea. But how best to show them that they should be afraid?"
"You cannot tell me it was easy to see children clinging to their mothers in fear," I said.
"Where are the Ishru?"
Calyx shouted toward the door as he stood from the bed. The door opened and Zeph bowed his head to me as the women in white filtered in like wraiths. They bowed to Calyx and then stood and nodded to me. Calyx stopped.
"What is the meaning of this?"
he demanded.
"Why would you not bow to your queen.
The Ishru all dropped to their hands and knees, and I jumped from the bed as Calix towered over one. Calix, I told him, coming by his side. I told them not to. I don't like it.
Don't like it?
He demanded. Yes, I said. I don't want them bowing to me. I don't want you making people humble themselves before me. He squared his shoulders off against mine.
And what would happen if the Consilium saw that a slave no longer needed to bow to a queen? Or to my other Vestai? I was crowned king as a child, Shalia, and they will always see me as a child. I can barely retain the respect that I have clawed from them, and it sounds foolish and small, but something so simple as a slave failing to show proper deference could threaten my position as king. And your new attendant will be watching you always, ready to report these infractions to her father. How the Thessalies would relish hearing that a slave doesn't bow to a king.
He shook his head.
Ruling cannot be about emotion, my sweet. It has to be about power and control. Always.
True power does not force others to make themselves smaller, I told him. Anger simmered in his eyes.
No, wife. You're wrong.
My eyes met his. How could he truly believe that?
Apologize to me for your foolishness.
My mouth opened in shock. It's what I believe, Calix, I told him. He stepped closer to me and I stepped back.
You are my wife. You will believe what I tell you to believe. Apologize.
My eyes burned. Calix, I said, shaking my head. He stepped forward, and as I stepped back again, there was a sick feeling inside me I recognized as fear. He didn't just want his people afraid. He wanted me afraid. And I was. I'm sorry, I whispered.
For what?
He demanded. For my foolishness, I said. He nodded once, leaning his head closer to mine.
So you see,
he murmured.
That is power.
The Ishru dressed me, and when I was done, Calix was waiting in the chamber, straightening his own clothes as he dismissed the servants.
Lovely,
he said, his eyes brushing over me.
You are right, wife. We must look to the children of this nation, first and always. I would like you to go to the Erudium today and allay their fears. Coddle the children and convince them that they were right to be afraid, but we will protect them. Tell them to tell their precepte and parents if they see sorcery.
He shook his head.
No, tell them that only with their help can we protect them.
He nodded, a smug smile on his face. What is the Erudium? I asked.
A temple of learning,
he told me,
where our young men are educated and our young women are groomed.
Groomed, I repeated.
Yes, he said, taught in the arts that will serve them as wives and mothers, sewing, how to fix their hair, that sort of thing. We've seen the dangers of over-educating women in other countries. We do not make such mistakes in the trifectate.
I remembered my father laughing and saying that he would rather spend more time educating his daughters, because they were the true leaders in every home, and to educate them was to educate the whole family at once. My head fell at the memory. What will you do? I asked.
Instruct the Vestai to spread word of the same throughout their lands,
he said,
with one difference, that they will receive a tax credit for every elementa that they produce. It's brilliant. My Vestai swear their first loyalty to their overflowing coffers, and it will keep them busy and happy and quash the resistance.
I gasped. Calix! He came and kissed my cheek with a bright smile.
You inspired the idea, my love. Thank you.
His hand slid over my chin, drawing it to him and pressing his mouth to mine.
You are good for my kingdom, wife.
Irredeemable. When I left the room, Adria was outside and she bowed to me. I no longer had the will to ask her to stop, so I merely sighed and straightened my back. You will show me to this Erudium? I asked.
Yes, my lady. And your guard? Stays with her,
Zeff said.
Very well, she said with her sly smile.
This way.
She led me to the courtyard and a waiting carriage. I drew a breath. Is this building somewhere in the Tri-City? I asked.
She looked warily at Zeff.
Yes.
Then we will walk there.
But, she gasped, we cannot walk there.
You will lead the way, I told her, or I will tell the king you refuse to take me. She huffed, looking at her thin silk shoes like they would melt away, and walked down the wide causeway.
It isn't close. And they're expecting us quite soon. In fact, we should have been there already. An absence that will not go unnoticed, I'm sure.
I glanced at Zeff, and he glowered at her in return. She looked at me, pausing as she walked.
I don't mean to be disrespectful. I know that you haven't been here before, and I just want to make sure you know of our ways, she told me. I am your attendant, after all, and no one wishes to displease the king.
I recoiled a little, unsure if this was meant as a threat or some kind of bait to get me to speak ill of my husband. We will walk, was all I said to her. She bowed to me.
Of course, my queen.
As Adria, Zeff, and I left the Tri-Castles, the recognition from people was instant. Even in their clothes, my skin was so different from anyone's in the Bonelands. A few had a warm yellow tone to their skin, but nothing like my and Kairos's rich brown. Still, not many people were in the streets, and those who were there barely raised their eyes to me as they moved quickly past. We passed a large building with a low, rumbling noise coming from it that shook the ground a little, and Zeff nodded to a man in uniform as we walked by.
"What's that?" I asked. "A grain mill," he told me.
He pointed to a long wall that ran out behind the building as far as I could see.
"Grain gets sent on the road, and men grind the grain to make flour."
I nodded once, and as we walked farther, we saw long lines of weary-looking women and children standing at the back of the mill. I frowned, looking at Zeff. He raised his shoulders.
They are waiting for their grain allowance.
Is there not enough grain? I asked. The fields looked so healthy on our way down here.
There is enough grain, he said, but not the men to grind it.
Where are the men? I asked.
Serving as soldiers, Adria said, cutting a glare to Zeff. Or building ships and armor in the communes.
Skilled men are sent away. And why can the women not work? I asked, looking over the lines. The women were thin and bedraggled, clutching their children. Adria looked like she had bitten something sour.
Oh, no! Women cannot work.
Why not? She shook her head.
Well, first of all, it would surely interfere with childbirth.
I looked at the mill thoughtfully.
Grinding grain could not be so much more difficult than carrying tents, and women did that up until they gave birth in the desert.
When they are close, perhaps, but not while they are with child.
But it's unsuitable. The three-faced god does not like women to be so active.
Like walking, she added, raising her chin. Unsuitable. Perhaps this was what Danae had meant when she said she wasn't the princess she was supposed to be. We walked past, but the sight of the mill stayed long in my mind as we approached our destination. The Iridium was in the center of town, past the factories and far from the water and the docks. It was the very heart of the city. New, like most of the city, it was massive, white and square and tall, with giant swaths of white fabric that dragged my eyes upward. Uniformed men stood guard out front, like this place held all the treasures of the kingdom. They let us in, and I watched as the Iridium guards all lined up behind Zeph. Adria breezed in, and I followed her. She led me into a wide, deep room that reminded me of a place in Jitra that had been formed by rock and used for public speeches. This was man-made, the rings where people could sit or stand, perfectly spaced, growing ever wider as they rose up. The room was full of children. Women, not dressed like the women of court, but in sturdier red garments that covered more skin and had many cloth ties, stood along the aisles, perfect endpieces to the rows of children. No one so much as twitched as I was led forward down a staircase to a platform. A chair on it was set off to the side, and Adria gestured for me to sit. As my bottom touched the chair, the entire crowd stood up, chins raised, chests pushed forward, and they sang. Three faces of the god, to watch over and protect me. Three faces of the god, to see all the good that's in me. I will be powerful, righteous, and true. I will stand tall for my country. The bone lands will rise anew, and my brothers and sisters will be free. In one motion, they all sat down and stared at me. I stared back, my heart beating faster.
My queen?
Adria murmured behind me. I turned.
I believe the king told them you would address them.
Explain what happened yesterday, she told me. I nodded and stood. They all stood with me. Sit, I said, and they immediately sat. How many of you were in the castles yesterday? I asked. Slowly, about 20 of the 100 or so children in the room raised their hands. One of them was Arrow, and he smiled when I looked at him. I'm sure it was frightening, I said, and several heads nodded. They were trying to scare you. I wasn't scared, shouted a boy, standing up. I only wished for a sword in my hand to gut them like fish. The children cheered at this, and I waited for them to quiet. I was frightened, I told him. And this brought total silence to the room. I wasn't sure if they meant to kill me. I wasn't sure if I would die the day I became your queen. Who are they? Came another voice. Who are the resistance? I opened my mouth, but no sound came. I knew what my husband wanted me to say, what I had to say. But they said resistance, and I heard Rian. If we spoke of the Elemente, I would hear my own name. I don't know, I told the child. Perhaps the king in his wisdom knows more than I do. I don't know who they are, but I know that where they go, violence will follow. And you must... My voice lost its surety. You must...
You must defend yourselves and your families from evil.
My head rose as everyone turned to look behind them. Up at the top of the amphitheater, Galen started to come down the steps, his eyes on me for a long moment before they swept over the room.
You are the nation's every hope,
he said as he descended.
And you must be the ones to tell your parents or your preceptae if you see someone using elemental magic. You must know what to look for, anything that seems out of place or strange or unnatural. You must trust your instincts on this. You are trained men and women of the Trifectet, and you know right from wrong.
He came to me, bowing over my hand before kissing it,
and returning to his audience. He clasped his hands behind his back.
Your queen was threatened yesterday,
he told them, glaring at them like they were responsible.
Who among you will defend her?
Every boy leaped to his feet, shouting.
Women, will you not defend your queen?
He asked.
They're just girls, one boy shouted.
When our nation is strong, we are all strong,
Galen shouted.
When our nation is defended, our queen is defended. How will you defend her?
He asked, pointing to an older girl up front.
By trusting my instincts, she said.
Yes, he shouted. Keep your eyes open. Trust your instincts.
The girls stood now too, and everyone clapped and shouted excitedly at him. Galen surveyed them sternly, not seeming to enjoy their praise, and as young as he was, I could see the military commander in him.
Now, he said, while I'm here, I wish to examine your future recruits.
He nodded to one of the standing women, who clapped her hands and ordered the children to the training grounds. They began filing out, and Galen turned to me.
Forgive the intrusion,
he said, bowing his head.
It was welcome, I said. I didn't really know what to say.
He shook his head.
Calix has always been totally at ease before a crowd. It took me far longer to feel comfortable speaking to others.
His mouth pursed thoughtfully.
And still most of what I do is shouting.
I looked down. That, I agreed softly. And you managed to say what he wanted, without it sounding so very hateful.
Keeping an eye on your surroundings and trusting your own understanding is usually good advice for our recruits. I figured it applied here. Truly, I don't think there's much for them to observe, so I don't see the harm in it.
There's harm in rewarding turning on one another, I told him. His eyes cut to me, and then behind me, where I was sure Adria still stood.
You should stay for training,
he told me flatly.
I'm sure the boys will enjoy fighting for your praise.
More fighting, I said, my voice barely more than a sigh. The corner of his mouth turned up the smallest bit.
Less blood with the children, usually.
He offered me his arm, and I caught my breath as I put my hand on him. He lowered his arm a little, pulling me closer as we walked forward.
Adria is not to be trusted,
he told me softly.
I don't mean to rebuke you, but you must watch your words around her.
It was the same as the Ishru. My husband would not be defied, would not be diminished, and certainly not by his wife. You will believe what I tell you to believe, he had said to me. My gaze dropped to the floor, and I felt Galen's eyes on me, but I didn't look up. He left us at the side of an arena with the rest of the girls and went to advise the boys as they practiced fighting. The girls all watched, straight-backed and silent. Adria matched their posture perfectly. I noticed one girl seated in the back with no one around her, her hair short at her neck, while every other girl had long braids.
They cut the hair of willful, unruly girls,
Adria said, following my gaze.
So no one will marry her.
What does her hair have to do with marriage?
There are contests,
Zeph explained, clearing his throat.
The Consecutio. The boys prove their lessons in physical combat. When they win a contest, they are allowed two privileges, to join the army and the choice of a wife.
Wife? Their children, I said, looking to him.
Elena, the one with short hair, has 17 years,
Adria told me.
Her eyes flicked over me. The same as you, my queen.
I looked back at her, surprised. She looked like a child to me. When people saw me, did they see a queen or a girl in a silver crown?
The boys are not given much to judge the women with.
Zeph told me.
The hair. It warns of an unsuitable match.
You both went through this? I asked them. Zeph nodded, and Adria raised her chin. Of course, she said. I was one of the finest pupils. I was chosen when I was 14. You're married? I asked her. She took a breath and held it, her body showing the tension of it, but she nodded.
Yes.
Zeph? I asked. His mouth twitched.
I didn't exactly win a contest, but I wouldn't have chosen a wife that way. I am not married, my queen.
Boys have the option to refuse? I asked.
As I said, it is a privilege, not a requirement.
So girls can also refuse? Adria's mouth fell. No, she said.
We should attend to the practice, my queen.
So what do you mean you didn't win a contest? I asked Zeph, ignoring her advice. You're in the army.
Yes,
he said, grinning.
And that is why I am the stuff of legends.
Oh, please, Adria said. You are just a brute. He chuckled. I knew I shouldn't take her bait, but Adria's comment was still on my mind. You wanted to refuse your match? I asked her. She stiffened.
He wasn't the one I was expecting to choose me,
she said carefully. I was in love with someone else, she admitted, her voice breath soft as she looked away from me. But Zeph made a huff of disbelief. I looked to him, and Adria shook her head sadly.
Do not mock me, she said.
But the command had the tone of begging.
You didn't love him, Zeph said. You thought you would get him. There's the difference.
Who? I asked, looking between them.
The commander,
Zeph said. And she looked to him, betrayed at the information as her face filled with color.
How could you? She snapped. You're a terrible bully, Zeph. You always have been.
She shook her head.
Besides, Galen knew. He knew what my father wanted for us. That was the plan, and I would have thought he would have had more consideration in refusing the wishes of the High Vestai.
Zeph shrugged.
There was no contract.
Adria shook her head bitterly. I don't want to discuss this any longer. If only feelings were dictated by a contract, I wanted to tell her. But it couldn't be said. Not to her, not in this court, perhaps not ever. I'm sure Galen must have simply missed this opportunity with you, Adria. Especially since I know that my husband and I both have great respect for your father and his wishes. I can only imagine my husband must have taken him to task, privately, for such a slight. Her chin rose a little higher.
I suppose so, my queen.
Besides, I told her with a smile, these military men are all the same. They need clear, direct orders, or else they're completely helpless. Isn't that right, Zeph? He bowed his head.
My queen is wise beyond contradiction,
he said with a smile. Adria nodded.
Quite so, my queen.
She met my eyes, a begrudging gratitude in her gaze, and it felt like a small measure of kinship between us. After the boys finished their training, Galen offered to escort us back to the Tri-Castles. When we got outside, he caught sight of one horse, and he turned sharply to the young man standing beside it.
"Where is the queen's carriage?"
he asked the groom.
"We didn't take one,"
Zeph told him.
"We walked,"
Adria huffed. Galen looked to her, and she looked away from him. Galen frowned.
You are aware you were attacked yesterday, my queen.
I raised my chin. Are you not confident in the abilities of your sapia to protect me, Commander?
I rather thought that was the point.
The point was not to use them to take unnecessary risks.
Precisely, Adria said.
Domina Viato,
Galen said.
You can take my horse back to the Tri-Castles, and I will escort the Queen.
But, she protested, looking to me. I will manage without your services, I told her, and thank you for your assistance today. Now I know not to cut my hair. She smiled. I would not recommend it. It was my pleasure, my queen. Shall I wait to attend to you at the Tri-Castles? No need, thank you, I told her. She stood and mounted the horse, and Galen looked thoroughly confused as she rode out of sight.
You were thinking of cutting your hair?
He asked, walking down the steps.
I walked with him with a grin, and Zeph lumbered behind us.
No, of course not. Confused, Galen looked to Zeph, who shrugged.
I waited a moment, then opened my mouth and drew a breath.
Galen, may I ask you a question?
He thought for a moment. I can't guarantee I'll answer it, but yes, you may ask.
Calix mentioned a few strange things to me last night. One was something he's mentioned before about a prophecy, and now a trivetus. Do you know what that means? Slowly, Galen nodded.
Yes. There was a trivetus my mother favored, a holy man.
He explained at my look.
Like the man who crowned you. This trivetus received visions. He claimed from the three-faced god, and my mother put a lot of faith in them. Just before she died, he had a vision that Calix would meet his death at the hands of an elementer. Calix called his powers sorcery, and convinced my father to put him to death. That was the start of the powers being illegal in this country.
Calix started that? I asked. But I thought it was your father who hated the Elemente.
No,
he said, shaking his head.
My father was at war with them. They were a powerful enemy, and we were losing the war. He hated the Vis Islands, but not the Elemente specifically.
His shoulders rose.
When we heard the prophecy, my father thought it meant Calix would die in the war. It made him fight harder. But no, I don't believe he ever hated them the way Calix does. He feared them.
Then why did he murder them? I asked hotly. You expect me to believe it was just a war dispute, and he wiped out an entire race? That was an act of hate.
Shalia,
he said firmly, stopping in the road.
You have to stop. Stop talking like this. Stop questioning these things. You won't like the answers or the consequences.
The answers? My thoughts started rushing faster. Calix hated the Elemente, murdering them, burning them alive, while the only remaining child of their leader had to watch. These were acts of hate. If their father hadn't been the one who hated the Elemente... No, I breathed, shaking my head. I staggered back. Everything Kata said. It had been Calix who had done that to her. No. Calix couldn't be responsible for the islands. It was your father. Everyone knows that. His eyes were locked on mine, holding me as sure as a physical touch.
Everyone knows what he wants them to know,
he said.
And that's it.
No! I pulled away from him. No! How could that be? He wasn't even king! Galen nodded slowly.
Do you know much of what happened before?
The war? I asked. Some.
The islanders were incredibly powerful. The gifts they had. They could control the natural world. And for a long time they were content. They ruled the seas. They were the wealthiest country in the known world. but they didn't have much land, and the High Priestess decided she wanted more. She wanted the trifecta.